Welcome to the 503 Report, where America's voice is heard. Thank you for listening online. Be sure to check out our website weekly as we bring Sacramento and the world to you. The 503 Report at www.503report.com, where America's voice is heard.
Boat would bring in these patients who were ill. They would bring them up and we would have to take them into this room and wash their hair. And some of them had never seen a bathtub and they were afraid to get in the water. I remember crying. My mother had to push me to go there with this nurse.
That day must have been about 3-4 ships. Must have been about 5-6,000 people. Jammed. I remember it was August. Hot as a pistol. And I'm wearing my long johns and a heavy Irish tweed suit. I'm dying with the heat. So you're not concerned. You don't realize that this is history in the making. You're just a newbie. You want to get in, get the hell out of there, and get off. You understand?
They got her off the boat. And then they walked in a parade to up those stairs into the building. Many of them came through with all their bedding and their last possessions, you know, that they own. They looked pretty bad.
These buildings were filled with people who were desperate, whether from hunger, discrimination. They didn't leave where they came from because life was so good for them. It wasn't. Whatever they had here was better. And that's what I feel.
On the first day of January 1892, they opened their asylum. And they let the people through. The first to cross the threshold of the Isle of Hope and Tears was Annie Moore from Ireland, was all of 15 years.
Now this is not Ellis Island at the turn of the 20th century. There are people in this world that would do anything to go to heaven in the name of their God. As a burgeoning world leader at the turn of the 20th century, people from all over the world came to America in hopes of freedom of social repression, freedom to practice their religious beliefs, and most important, the freedom to build for oneself and family as they saw fit. America has always had their arms open to the people of the world with those beliefs. America will continue to open its arms to people of all races, creeds, and religious beliefs. What our elected leaders and we as a people cannot allow to happen is for our country to become a sanctuary country without proper vetting of all who enter our great nation. As I said at the beginning, this is not Ellis Island at the turn of the 20th century. There are too many people in this world who hate America with all their being because we believe in quality for all, your freedom to practice your religious beliefs, and most importantly, to become whatever you want without government interference in your life. It is Friday. It is our favorite day of the week, and how the world has changed in 100 years. It is the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you every Friday. And with me, my good friend, Andrew Wahlborn. Andrew, how are you doing today, buddy?
Inspired. I mean, what an inspirational opening you just did there, Tim. And, you know, you open up a lot of questions, as usual, with some of the statements that you bring up every time we open up our show, folks. And, you know, one of the big questions that we're going to have to start asking. I mean, what you said about a opportunity in America without government interference, is that the case today in the United States? And then second, folks, the reality is that are we still the nation, as you asked and posed, Tim, at the turn of the century with Ellis Island? Are we still the nation that welcomes the weak, the burdened, and the people who can't defend themselves? Are we still the nation today of immigrants that we like to throw out? I would pose that we're not anymore as a nation. And maybe as Americans, especially out here in California, we need to take that position. Look, are we still a nation of immigrants, folks? I don't know. You tell us. Hello, folks. Andrew Wahlborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you, podcasting on iTunes, where America's voice is heard, Tim.
It is, Andrew. And boy, how the past years have changed everything. And of course, this past week, what has happened in this world? What is going on in this world? You know, Syria, the last 4 or 5 years, hundreds of thousands dead, people fleeing to four corners of the earth. And what has happened? You know, did they get into France this past week? Oh, we saw what just happened right there from the bordering countries in Belgium and so on. What is going on? You know, America, back at the turn of the 20th century, we opened up our gates. You know, we wanted to build what we saw as the perfect country out there, and I believe we still have that. But, man, you know, they want 10,000 people to come here, and the questions are being raised. Had 9/11 not happened 15 years ago, let's turn back the clock. What would it be like? Would we have taken them without no problems? But the world is not like it was back at the turn of the 20th century. It is a totally different set of circumstances now, Andrew.
I just don't know if we're still a nation of immigrants, folks. I mean, we've got centuries now of established American citizenship. We've got centuries of established American culture. Are we forgetting our culture by focusing on too much immigration coming into this nation as established born citizens of generations? And so that's going to be the big question we have to look at. And you know, you mentioned about the Irish. You know, let's take a look at this. I'm gonna pose another thought. For instance, folks, if we're going to welcome all of these refugees and individuals who are running from their nation, the big question is that why are we going to allow the young military age men to enter this nation when our young military age men and women are over there defending them? So, I mean, what about a question of why don't we just militarize these young men and women when they show up, put them in a boot camp? Teach them how to be a soldier as a price to pay of entry into America. We did it once. We did it when the Irish hit the shores of New York in the middle of our Civil War. We did it. And as a result, when you hit the dock, you began defending for your right to be here. And if that is the case in history, why can't we repeat this a little bit and take a look at some of these 25-year-old men coming over here running, almost a little bit cowardish from
well,
whatever
is, Andrew,
oppression that they believe that they're under, and send them back as a force within a year or so to repopulate a area that we need to go in and basically just annihilate.
And you're absolutely correct. And would that be a proper vetting of that, Andrew, to go through a boot camp and a structure on there? Would we be able to tell if those are worthy? If they refuse to do that, would that just be their ticket? You're not coming
home.
Here.
You're going back home. I mean, you can't come into America, folks, thinking that, you know, you're dependent upon us, first of all, to give you a government handout on behalf of the people of this great nation. And then, you know, expect us, our young men and women, to go over there and defend you when you're running from your fight.
I don't think anybody has said what we just said in the past 2 minutes here, Andrew. I think that hits the nail right on the head, my friend.
Well, listen, look at the history. You know, when the Cubans came over, what would we do? We put them in camps down in Florida. And then, of course, there's a great famous movie about that called Scarface that talks about and shows exactly what happened. happen. But look, the reality is what prevents us from actually doing what we did back in 1860 during the Civil War? I mean, if you want to come to America, I'm going to say it over and over and over, then you need to learn to fight for America, because you know what? Our history is about ourselves fighting for our freedom. And so don't expect us to go and defend your freedom when you're not willing to do it yourself.
Nobody has said that. You've heard it right here, folks, today on the 503 Report, Andrew.
A little radicalism coming from Andrew Wellborn here. And I gotta tell you, folks, now it's time for something you should know. You don't know, maybe you don't want to know, but you're going to know right now. Today's date, October 20th. The year is 1789 of all states, and of course, this state wasn't the state it is today. New Jersey is the first state to ratify our Bill of Rights. 1862, the Confederate armies of Mississippi and Kentucky merge as Army of Tennessee under General Braxton Bragg. And of course, we all know the great town of Fort Bragg here in California, named after him. And then, of course, in 1866, Howard University is founded in Washington, D.C.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Heard every Friday after the news here on 1240 KSUE. Catch the podcast on iTunes. You can check us out there the past 4 years as well. Coming up, the half-hour show right here on 1240 KSUE, the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
And now, it's live from the high desert in the Sierra Nevada mountains. It's the 503 Report, Northeastern California's original political talk show, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And here's your host, Tim Reinertsen.
Thank you, Stan. Welcome back, everybody. The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Heard every Friday right here after the news on 1240 KSUE. And you can catch our show, iTunes, podcasted. 4 years worth of shows right there as well. We can't thank them enough for that. With me, as always, my good friend on Friday, our favorite day of the week, Andrew Wellborn. How you doing, pal?
You know, I'm doing great until last Friday when we concluded our show. And then I came home and I saw all of the terrorist activity in the city of France. And I have to tell you, you know, I'm kind of frustrated listening, folks, and I'm going to rant a little bit throughout this show. I'm frustrated listening to the individuals being shocked and appalled on this. I mean, what do you expect? France has been under assault from these radicals since, I don't know. I mean, what do we need more? Great U.S. servicemen from Sacramento, California, saving a train? I mean, the thing that frustrates me the most, folks, is that you don't see these individuals bearing arms and defending themselves whenever these strikes happen. And I'm going to get in more to that here on the bottom part of this show as far as how what I believe is the reason why. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you, podcasting on iTunes, where America's voice is heard, Tim.
And our voice is being heard loud here on 1240 KSUE right here today. We're talking about immigration and what things that we think should happen. And Andrew mentioned some things earlier that we should do and that they should do to help protect their freedoms out there. But we got some other things to talk about. Saturday's coming up, Andrew, one of your favorite days of the week.
Well, I got to tell you real quick, I'm just going to skip the college football, man, because this is way more important than what's going on with college football and what's happening out there in the NCAA. And I got to tell you, you know, I'm just frustrated. First, I want to give a shout-out to Mike and Sarah, who just shot us a little word that they're listening to us in Prescott, Arizona. And we really appreciate you guys tuning in here today. And look, this is about rabid dogs. I mean, you know, we mention it from time to time about rabid dogs. Now, don't get me wrong, folks. Just because rabid dogs have a bunch of puppies doesn't mean that the puppies are rabid. But if the rabid dog bites the puppy will become rabid. And so what I'm getting at this is this. We have an ideology that we cannot allow exist. We have a group of individuals within a region that we cannot allow to exist. And we're going to have to make that decision, I believe, across this nation, folks. We're going to have to wake up to this and not tolerate this. Yeah, I got a little anger in my voice today because I am frustrated. I'm frustrated because now here we go again. We're going to have to send our men and women, our young boys and girls, over across to that nation that does not want to defend themselves. As we put on the first part of the show, these refugees seeking political asylum. Well, guess what? When you've got, you know, half of these refugees, military age young men, why don't we put them in a boot camp? Make them pay a price for the freedom that they're seeking within America, like we have done for so many years, for so many centuries in this nation. And so, you know, America's not free, folks. Regardless of the socialist, leftist, Marxist movement out here in California and across this nation tried to say, freedom is not free. And there's a price. And it's time that we start making the individuals, I believe, that are seeking this freedom begin to pony up and pay the price.
If the 10 candidates or so that are running for the president of the United States and the highest office in the land and in this world could listen and take a point of what you are just talking about out there and throw that out there, you know, they're going to say, the socialist Marxists are going to say, well, you know what, we are over there training those men and women right now, and they have done nothing but turn tail and be cowards and run. America didn't do that 240 years ago. We did not. We had nobody except for us, Andrew.
Our good friend and fellow libertarian, well, I'm not a fellow libertarian, but libertarian, the champion of the libertarian, Christopher Bennett, put it best last week, folks. Individual incentive. If you want your freedom, you have to have the incentive to be able to fight for it. If you want a piece of America, or you want an opportunity to go into Europe and enjoy the freedoms of Europe and the freedoms of America, you got to learn to fight for it. That's called the incentive. If you want a piece of this American pie, you got to bring something to this table. And as we were saying earlier, man, are we still a nation of immigrants in this nation? Are we still Ellis Island, like you played on the first part of the show, as a nation that welcomes you're weak, you're tired, you're undefendable, whatever. I mean, are we still that nation? And I'm going to say that maybe we're not at this point in time, and maybe we have to start looking at ourselves seriously as Americans, because we are generations and generations and generations of Americans at this point in time. So individuals who want to come to this nation, there's a price to pay. It's called, you got to work, and maybe you have to defend this nation in order to receive a benefit from the great people of this great nation.
120 years ago, Andrew, and when we opened up Ellis Island and this great nation to the folks around the world, we had just come off the heels of a war that separated America, the Civil War, and we were still healing at that. And we were not the great nation that we are now. But because of those people coming here, and we opened up our gates, and we got the best of everybody throughout the world here in our country. And they did go to war to help this great nation, and they should so do that again right now, Andrew.
Look, these radical cowards, okay, look, they're attacking soft targets. Let's define what really a soft target is, folks. It's a gun-free zone. You know, I mean, you see them attacking New York City. Why? Because New Yorkers are not allowed to carry a firearm. You don't see them attacking a city like Chicago. Can you imagine all of a sudden if they start shooting in Chicago with all the gun violence that's going on in Chicago? I mean, they're going to be scared that somebody's going to pull out a gun, because probably somebody in Chicago's got a gun ready to go, just like they did down in Texas. You see them starting to attack these soft targets, these gun-free zones. The people of France, let's face it, the people of Paris, the people of France, they're a socialist nation, you know. And so when you run and you expect a government to defend you, because you're not going to defend yourself, then that sets you up for an easy target. Now, let's talk about these civilians. You know, I mentioned earlier about the rabid dogs. I mean, look, I mean, maybe it's high time that we just stop being concerned with civilian casualties. And unfortunately, maybe some rabid children may get caught up in the extermination. I mean, good God, I mean, we put puppies down all the time in the name of humanity, for goodness sake, at some of our animal shelters.
Sure.
Here in the United States. I mean, the bottom line is this: until we mobilize as a nation, as a world, and we just eliminate these individuals, then the whole world is going to be safe. And they're a small group. I mean, let's face it, they are a small group, and we just going to have to take a page, I think, out of Tombstone. If you want to be a cowboy and you want to wear that red sash, we're going to put you down. We have to start taking that approach, because why, folks? They're not concerned about killing your innocent mothers,
no,
fathers,
not.
Brothers, sisters, or children. So at some point in time, we as America need to wake up, and God forbid another attack happens in the United States. And you know what? I'm going to transition this very quickly here from my rant to my logic. Should ISIS attack us here in the United States, you might as well just call it game over for the Democrats. The Democrats have got to be scared right now of this attack. Hillary Clinton, look how quickly she changed her point of view within a short amount of time. If ISIS were to pull off a very successful attack here in the United States, you might as well just call the White House Republican, regardless of whoever the nominee is.
Absolutely.
Next year.
And I couldn't say, but that is absolutely the truth. But Andrew, again, you mentioned that they need to come here, and you have talked about this in a roundabout way. When people come to our country, they need to be productive, need to help out. We've never really said militarily before, but that is a great avenue for them to help out. And I would think that they would be more than willing to do that, to go back to their country, to maybe even liberate their country and go back again.
Well, I don't know, but, you know, it's going to be the condition of acceptance. We all got conditions of employment.
Absolutely, we do.
Conditions we've got to beat. And all I'm doing, folks, is I'm pulling a page out of our history. You know, once upon a time when the Irish hit the docks, as we said, once those Irish hit the dock, they were given a gun. And that gun, you know, they were going to the front with our War of the States. And, yeah, I don't know, man. It's just a rant. And sometimes you take a chance making a rant like this. But we're going to open up the lines. Looks like we do have a call on the line. Welcome to 503 Report. What's on your mind? Thanks for joining this conversation.
Good afternoon. Beautiful day in Lassen County, America.
Thank you.
If the Republican gets in the White House and we have to go to war, is anybody in this county willing to pay a war tax? Are they willing to put money on the line to train our men right and to give them what they need and to make sure it's not going to be money overspent on projects that the companies can pocket? I'm willing to do that. What about you rant and ravers out there, you patriots? Have a good day, America.
Thank you very much.
I mean, you can't argue with the point. I mean, you look, what are you willing to pay for? I mean, if we are going to go to a war, and this is something I'm going to give President Barack Obama a little bit of credit on here real quick, because, you know, the conservative media, they're pounding him pretty heavy. But, you know, we didn't notice how quickly we deployed a full battle armament aircraft carrier out of Virginia within less than 24, 36 hours. Mm-hmm. So we've been ready to deploy for a little bit. And then, you know, we're not paying attention how quickly we are beginning to, you know, attack and take out these oil tankers that are illegally moving oil in the illegal black market. So, you know, I mean, we're going to continue on with this discussion as the year goes, folks. I just wanted to take a few minutes to get my rant off before our guest called in, and it looks like he did call in. And of course, it's always great to have our current United States Congressman Doug LaMoffa joining us here today. Congressman, welcome to 503 Report. How are you doing today, sir? Thanks for joining this conversation.
Doing great. Nice to be back home in sunny California and back in the normal part of the state as well, too, you know. So it's good. Thanks. Appreciate having me on. So sorry if I'm a little rattled here. I'm just getting out of the muffler shop here. I had vehicle maintenance for my daughter to go off on a thing here. So, you know how that goes.
Well, you've got normal everyday life stuff that you have to take care of, sir.
Well, there is that. Yeah, you got to get that done once in a while.
Yeah, you bet. You know, sir, you step right into the conversation. I'm going to get you briefed real quickly. We're obviously talking about the Syrian refugee situation coming in America and the opposition of most Americans, 53% just absolutely say no. And, you know, it looks like we're staging up for another battle with the president when it comes to, I don't know, this immigration or this asylum or this refugee. What word do we want to use?
A lot of people are using invasion when you see the video and see what the numbers look like out of how it's hitting Western Europe. I mean, the U.S. has been blessed for all of its existence by the Atlantic of not having, you know, nearly the vulnerability for invasion by combatants or this or anything else. So, you know, I mean, someone might say, oh, that's an extreme term. These are people that are just fleeing for freedom and not oppression. I'm like, well, yeah, some of them are, certainly. But we have a right and an obligation to make sure who we have coming over our borders, not just this current so-called migrant issue, but illegal immigration has been an ongoing problem anyway. You know, we have that right and duty to know who's coming in and be able to say how many we want to come in to this country, same as you do your backyard or your front door.
Or in our case, sometimes to say no to nobody coming in, maybe.
Well, that's one of our options. You know, I don't know if that ever happened complete no, but it can be to no to certain types. We don't want people that haven't been vetted, certainly, who haven't been checked out coming from that region, and that's the legislation we moved here just this week to first couple things, to pause anything from happening until we catch up and have a system that can handle it better. And then for those that we would have a allow to come in. You know, we're going to let some in, but they would have to be signed off by three different members of the security agencies in Washington, you know, FBI and immigration and anyway. Three different secretaries are going to have to be in charge for and sign off on each one that, yes, I certify this is a person that's been through the background.
Wow.
Congressman Doug LaMalfa joining us here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And the congressman didn't hear the open when I was talking about Ellis Island and really the beginning of the 20th century for the United States of America, Congressman, when we opened it up, and it was to everybody who wanted to come here, and we saw 12 million people through the course of that go through our Ellis Island and into these United States. But it is a totally different ball game in the 21st century as compared to what it was over 100 years ago in New York.
Well, there's a lot of differences in what we're talking about here. You know, people talk about refugees in the past that, you know, like Jewish refugees back during World War II and that era and stuff. That, you know, what you had was people that weren't coming from a background that are, it's hard to tell if they're mixed up in terrorism organizations or not. They were escaping Germany and Nazism, and we've seen that many other examples. It was a little easier to sift out who's coming over, and right now what we have is you don't know who the sides are over there. So, and can we create enough records out of the mess that's Iraq and Syria to do so? I don't know, but I think we should err on the side of the security and safety of America and its citizens before we do that. You know, the problem is, had we not done that premature escape or whatever from Iraq, you know, pulling all our people out, then we wouldn't have nearly the problem with ISIS driving the cause. You know, the president was so determined to show a win on paper of getting us out of Iraq and getting us, you know, getting Gitmo closed down and allowing those people to be on U.S. soil. I mean, there's no wins in that. It never has made any sense. And now we see all the good work our military had done over there. You know, whether you agree with the beginning of the war or not at all, we were there. And some work, a lot of good work did get done. And that's almost that's out the window as ISIS has captured a bunch of our vehicles and taken a bunch of that land back, and it's just wreaking havoc. And so poor decisions by poor leaders have given us what we have here. We need to be killing the problem as it is, and you wouldn't have refugees. You wouldn't have the situation, you wouldn't have people trying to morally browbeat you to saying we have to do this. So that's where the that's where you know hit at the base of the fire with your extinguishers. It's killing terrorism right where it's coming from, and then you don't have these effects.
Congressman Doug LaMalfa is joining us here on the 503 Report, and we just had the House just pass that bill yesterday, the day before, with some Democrats jumping on board as well on reforming some immigration, and as specifically speaks to the Syrian refugees and as they're coming over here. But as we know, the President of the United States has vowed to veto that. But it looks like the numbers might be there for a two-thirds override of that. Is that what you see right now, Congressman, as well?
The House numbers were there. It was 289. We have one vacancy in the House, so 289, 290 is needed for an override. Now, will the politics completely change when it's not just passing a bill and the Democrats that voted for it were from vulnerable districts that are afraid not to vote for it? Will the politics change when it's actually basically being in your face to the president and overriding his veto? That'll be actually fascinating to watch from a political standpoint is what they decide to do. I hope they do it because we're talking, again, the basic security of the nation here. And the place blew it on the Iran deal that just happened, you know, a few weeks ago, and the Senate not even getting a vote out. So, you know, it's pathetic what some of the people on the left are willing to do politically to endanger the rest of us. It's inexplicable to me.
You know, Congressman, real quick, I'll make this point. I do not intend to draw you into this, but you know, I was mentioning earlier on our show about some discussions I'm having with some people and some folks off air about, you know, look, if we've got 10,000 refugees seeking political asylum here in the United States, you know, where 50% of them are males who are capable of fighting, you know, what's the why don't we just immediately put those individuals within boot camp and begin to teach them how to fight for the purpose of going back and defending their nation? nation as a price to pay seeking the political asylum. You know, they'll have a job, they have payment, they have incentive, and then maybe they can take their nation back, similar to what a lot of nations have done throughout our history. So with that statement being made, you know, Paul Ryan now being elected to the House of Representatives. And, you know, I was, I'm going to tell you, I was kind of disappointed, you know, to see how everybody treated Kevin McCarthy. You know, obviously, I mean, I've known Kevin McCarthy since he was in the state assembly. And it was very disappointing for me living out here in California to see, you know, a solid representative of California actually not stepping into that speakership.
Well, yeah, I was stunned as well as very disappointed when that, you know, we went into that room to have the vote at noon on that day, and a few minutes later he's saying that it's not adding up right for him, you know, or actually more for the conference, for the body here. He didn't want to put it through more divisiveness where there clearly wasn't 247 on board to do it. So, you know, it's just, it was one of the most selfless things I've ever seen done. He put the conference for himself and the House. So, you know, that's pretty good. But, yeah, very disappointing because I thought he would have been great. And for California, it would have given us some advantages, too, because he's very focused on our issues with water and the whole problem with environmental regulations and California's terrible business climate. Would have been a big asset. But all that said, Paul Ryan is a great speaker. I'm actually very proud of him. And so, you know, if it had not, wasn't, you know, for the disappointment on the McCarthy side, for me personally, and as you expressed, you know, Ryan is going to be very, very good at this. We're, you know, we've already changed some of the rules of the House to have a little more all-round input on our steering committee and things like that. So, you know, he's trying to get to more openness and more just a better way of doing business. And, you know, the things can get maybe a little lax or maybe a little, it's just faster to do it this way versus that way. No, he wants, in parallel, we still have things we have to get done in the very short term. We got to get hammered out. Mm-hmm. You know, December 11, some of the funding mechanisms end, so we got to get the omnibus spending appropriations bills out, so that, you know, and good quality of those. We got a lot of good work that was done on those appropriations bills to rein in spending and keep it focused. This is long as another bunch of bad stuff gets dumped in with the omnibus bill too. We start tacking things on, you know. So anyway, Ryan's going to be great, but you know, getting back to the focus here, he's actually doing a great job of communicating. He's going on all the shows, and he's going to do a lot of that because that's what we've been a little bit lacking on. Speaker Boehner, you know, he just wasn't his forte being quite as much on the shows, and he's just got a little different style. And so, hey, you know, he had intended to step aside for a while now, but the opportunity wasn't there with how things were working. So we're on a good course now.
Well, it doesn't seem like to me that Paul Ryan's going to, you know, get emotional and cry every time he starts reflecting or get excited about something. But, you know, the big concern that we've expressed on the show was, you know, we use the term American rejects quite a bit. And, you know, the problem with the Obama administration is that he's empowered American rejects, people who have been rejected by the American people for presidents and in key positions of power, which, you know, question the credibility as far as how other foreign nations viewed us. And so the big concern that I hear and that we're talking about is the lack of credibility Paul Ryan may have to the American people as a whole, having been rejected already for vice president. So speaking of the presidency.
Oh, well, you know, that's politics.
Yeah, sure.
People that can run and lose because, you know, Americans were, you know, once again hypnotized by the hope and changey talk in 2012, or at least, you know, over half the voters were. So, you know, what do you do about that? It doesn't make him not a good choice. You know, and this is Speaker of the House. This isn't VP. So, you know, he's been very. I'm really proud of him. Actually, I have a good feeling in our meetings there about you know, him moving forward.
I have to be honest with you. Right now, I'm pretty impressed with him, too. He's actually doing a pretty decent job, I believe, as far as the how he has come into the situation and how he's beginning to evolve it and really taking a low profile, I think, as far as getting that caucus squared away. Of course, we're coming into the national election. And so you made the Sacramento Bee here today or yesterday with your recent endorsement. It looks like you are reaching out and endorsing one of our presidential candidates. You want to talk about that for a second?
Sure. I've looked at the field here and watched the debates, or at least most of them. I haven't seen the Democrat debates yet, but then I haven't really been. I've had paint I needed to wash dry too. So
we call it watching the grass grow here.
Okay, yeah, good. We need more of that for the ranchers and stuff. But you know, just knowing what the backgrounds are and how they're explaining themselves, and just looking at the big picture, I think of the candidates that we have. Marco Rubio presents the best combination of ability to articulate, having been mixed up right in the middle of the issues in his years in the Senate, and putting out the right message on that so far, because messaging is key. And he's going to be able to tell the American voters very capably the position we need to go. So I like his position. He is taking on the issues and his track record so far. Yeah, you know, there's been some flare-ups on immigration discussions here, but I think what's important to note on that is that he started out with a discussion on, well, what would we do to fix immigration? And soon when that all went bad, he withdrew from that I think they call it the Gang of Eight discussion on that, and he didn't endorse that at all. So, you know, there's people still want to tag him with that. But, and then there's the whole idea of electability. You know, if you're going to put a candidate up, it better be somebody that appeals to a broad section of American voters. It isn't just what the Republican, you know, hardcore voters are going to want. You got to get a little softer Republican. You're going to have to vote attract a few independent voters, maybe even a handful of Dems here and there. So, and I think he's going to be able to do that better than anybody up there. That you know, at the end of the day, because by the time we're next in October and some of the ballots start going out and people are starting to make decisions on this, I think you're going to see some of the other folks fade on this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That are, you know, putting pretty generalized rhetoric out there. You know, I mean, I suppose we have to talk about the Donald here a little bit, and he's scratching a niche a lot of people have. You know, a lot of frustration with Americans and voters, and that you know, not enough is being said about this immigration stuff and some of the other things. But I'm watching his answers to questions, and they're starting to just, you know, in the beginning, they can be more generalized, and he hasn't really formalized or gotten down to much specific. And you can throw Marco Rubio a question out there, and he can nail the thing without having notes in front of him on just about any topic. So, you know, so he looks like a really good candidate for us at this point to carry the torch and not just win primaries, but be able to do battle in the November election very effectively.
Well, as usual, Congressman, we do run short of time every time you come on, and we appreciate you coming on. But I'm gonna have a little fun here and throw a little joke your way. I mean, look, you're already 0-1 as far as early endorsements for some of these presidential candidates.
Nice.
Now, you know, I don't know if I was Marco Rubio, I'd be so welcoming to your endorsement. But hey, man, we wish you the best. And you said exactly what a lot of us agree with Senator Marco Rubio. But the question, obviously, is going to be age. And so, you know, we appreciate you coming on to the show, sir, and if talking to your constituents up here, and if people are always that they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Contact, we have three district offices to serve, one in Reading, one in Oroville, one in Auburn, and that's a good way to do so. Or if you want to talk on the political side, you can email me at doug@douglamalfa.com if you want to talk politics. So.
Very good, sir. Well, we'll be in touch with you, and we'll try to schedule this a little more often. What do you think?
That'd be good. So, and just to finish that little last retort there, I sat with Marco, and he's very, very gracious and very pleased and very happy to have me on board.
I'm sure he is.
I'm the first Californian to declare, so, conference. So that was a little win in their sales, too, for whatever effect that has. I don't think I'm a big deal, but, you know, it's all a lot of little pebbles that makes a driveway, right?
Oh, it's all joshing and fun, as we say.
I know, all right. Yeah, I can take it. So, hey, thanks a lot. right, you guys have a great weekend and a great Thanksgiving, and all your listeners as well.
We appreciate that.
Thank you very much, sir. We couldn't have said any better.
You know, Congressman Doug LaMoffin, man, great guest. We really appreciate him taking the time out of his schedule and actually calling into the 503 report from time to time. And of course, he's got a great sense of humor. And I couldn't help but that last shot on him. And, you know, it's going to be interesting, folks, because the races are starting to tighten up, especially at the national level. And, you know, like the congressman said, a lot of candidates that we are talking about today might not be on the ballot come June. Because let's not forget, California, that's when we vote. Our primaries are in June. So take your time. Be calm. Don't get too excited about a candidate that you get so distraught if your candidate is not on the ballot and you cannot rally behind whoever the candidate's going to be.
Absolutely, Andrew.
Okay, now time for our favorite book. It comes from Proverbs 11:25. Who refreshes others will be refreshed. God bless you, America.
503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
And of course, we want to thank those men and women who go to work every day, working the toughest beat in the state, performing their duty so that you, our listener, up and down California and across this great nation can be safe.
Folks, have yourselves a great weekend. Grab a cup of coffee and join us tomorrow at 7 o'clock here on 1240 KSUE for a rebroadcast Sunday at 7:30 before pre-program shows in about a half hour at 1240 KSUE. iPod and iTunes, we can't thank them enough. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Hello, America. Let me thank you for your time.